you're a good person. You desire to be a good person, to do a good job. You know, you want to show up for everybody and be that person who's strong. And those are admirable qualities, but you don't have any control over the fact that you're just a human being. Like, you're one person who has one person's capacity on a daily basis. And if you snap, or you are fried one day, or your patience is low one day, or whatever, the last thing that's going to help you get out of that situation is to beat yourself up for it.
You're listening to episode 185 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset.
The courage to face fears with persistence.
Being able to be present enough in this moment to choose my response thoughtfully.
We have the strength to bend to life stressors, to bend to adversity without snapping, without breaking.
There are only six things that contribute to our quality of life, and they are all experiences.
In every moment, we are deciding who we want to be and how we want to live our lives.
Noticing what your brain is doing and then being able to make choices.
Mobilize the things that we know lift us up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. My name is April, and I'm your host, and I'm excited to be joined by my co-founder in Peak Mind, Ashley Smith.
I'm pumped you're here.
Yay. Well, this is interesting because I'm just going to dive right in. We have a lot today, and so I'm not even going to get to any of the blah, blah in the beginning. I'm just going to go for it. Something that this you may not realize if you're in this audience is that a lot of the topics that we cover, lots of times they come from you. We'll hear from you directly. Maybe you email us or message us. Maybe it's a DM on social media. Or maybe I just see someone out in social media or out in the world who feels like they kind of fit in with our podcast community and our audience, and they express a concern that they have or a need that they have. And so we address it on the podcast. And the nice thing about having a medium like this that we control is that we can pivot pretty quickly and pick up a topic that people might be struggling with. Mm-hmm. So recently, I was poking around on social media and I saw the account of a listener, somebody who I know listens to us, and just in their stories, they were talking about the upcoming school year. And they were saying that they were already feeling really concerned and feeling really anxious about what the school year was going to bring with COVID on the scene. They were already anticipating some of the pressure that they were going to be putting on themselves and the feelings that result from that. And it just kind of went on with some of the concerns that I could imagine a lot of people in this audience had.
Right.
So we solicited some feedback out in the social medias. We got some amazing feedback back from people that basically confirmed there is a lot of worry out there. And so really, that's the reason why we're creating this episode. We wanted to rapidly pivot, make sure that we created a resource for you, because there are aspects of psychological strength that can really help during times like what we're all facing.
Mm-hmm. I know for me, in my psychology practice, I work with kids and adults. So some of it is people involved in the school districts or parents making decisions about what to do, kids trying to figure it out. It's a rough time, and everything is in flux right now, and people are really struggling to figure out what to do. And to me, it almost seems like there was the adjustment during the initial COVID and shutdowns, and then you kind of adapt, right? And then especially as summer came, it's like, okay, we kind of hit our groove, but now we're up against another challenge again, right? Like, things are changing, and should they change, and how do we navigate this? So it seems like a really timely topic.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I want to do before we really even dive into this is I want to talk about what we're not going to be doing with this episode, because it'll probably deviate quite a bit from what you see out there in other podcasts and other media. This episode is not going to be 10 ways to force your mind to think positively, or 5 ways to juggle everything on your plate and do it all with perfection, or here's how you can craft the perfect bubble bath and melt all your problems away. Yeah, we're not going to be talking about anything unrealistic like that. Our goal at Peak Mind is always to operate inside reality. And the fact is, life is sometimes hard.
Yeah, and no amount, I mean, we can certainly talk about being positive in bubble baths and self-care. I mean, we did talk about self-care a few episodes back, and our take on that, why it's not just bubble baths, but sometimes life really is hard and we need to be prepared. It would be like the equivalent of saying, hey, go run this marathon. It'll be awesome. You'll love every minute of it if you're doing it right. No, it's hard. It's hard. And it's about having the strength and the stamina and the endurance and the resources and tools to get through it, to navigate it as smoothly as possible. And this is no different. That's what we need to be thinking about and talking about, is how do we take things as they actually are, and how can we rise to the challenge that's in front of us without getting bogged down by it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we want to come to you with this episode with real tools, real techniques, evidence-based stuff that will help you move through what is just going to be a challenging time for most of us, mm-hmm. Without denying the reality that we're in. It's just, let's call it what it is. The situation is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, and Ashley, I know you talk a lot about this, is people sometimes make a difficult situation even more difficult because we've got limited energy and we end up focusing it on things that we can't control. I mean, we put like so much mental and emotional energy in places that we can't control. I'm wondering if you can dive in there a little bit about some aspects of this coming school year that are just, sorry, you just can't control these things.
Well, and that's so hard because we all want to be in control, right? And there's certainly a link between control and happiness, right? Like if you don't have control over your life, we tend to be less happy. But what I see, especially, you know, I've been in the anxiety world for what, a decade and a half, maybe longer at this point. And so much of it that I've seen, it just boils down to being a little bit misguided on this notion of control. It's absolutely fine to want to control things. I do too. But what I see is that people are confused about what they can and can't control. They spend so much time and energy trying to control the things they can't, and then readily give up control over the things they can.
Mm.
A few years ago, I kind of came up with this in my head. I call it the circle of control. And it's, you know, well, the things inside my circle, that's where I put my time and effort. The things outside of, it's a different strategy. And so let me give some examples. So the future is not in my circle of control. Now, that gets kind of complicated because we can say like, well, if I practice things, then I'm going to get better. If I go to school, I get a degree, then I can get this job. Yeah, maybe some of the things I do might impact the future, but I can't control the future directly. So my behaviors, my decisions are in my circle of control. Other people's behaviors, not. Now, that's not to say I can't influence it, especially like if you're a parent, you do a lot of influencing of children's behaviors, but you can't control it. I'm sure you guys can think of examples of trying to make your kid do something or not do something and getting really frustrated because it didn't work out. It's not in your circle of control. Thoughts and feelings, other people's, not yours. We spend a lot of time trying to control other people's impressions of us. That's not really in my control. Now, again, I can influence it. So it's not always this black and white. Like, April, if I walked up and kicked you in the shin, you're probably going to think something negatively about me. All right. Maybe I caused that, but it's not 100% in my control, meaning that I am in charge of the outcome, that it is in my capability, within my power, within my authority. So we need to get clear on that.
Yeah.
And this is this time in particular, can I go back to thoughts and feelings for 1 second?
Because I want
to be clear on what goes inside your circle of control. Because a lot of people are like, well, your thoughts and feelings, those are yours to control. And I would argue that it's a little more complicated than that. Because if I tell you, just don't think that way, just don't think about chocolate cake, what'd you think about?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Don't be sad. Okay. Sometimes thoughts and feelings come up because you are a human with a brain and so much of that is out of your control. It's that subconscious. And I know we talk a lot about all of that stuff that goes on in your brain behind the scenes. What you can control is what you do when those thoughts and feelings show up.
Mm-hmm.
That's psychological strength.
Mm-hmm. So in this particular context, as we're moving into the school year, mm-hmm. to get super specific, you as an individual person, the situation is not inside your circle of control. You can't control the fact that COVID exists. It does. Your school system, it's going to give you some set of options. Maybe it's limited, maybe it's one option, maybe it's many, depending upon where you are, but you don't control those. You also can't immediately control your own financial situation and whether you need to work and earn a paycheck, whether you need two people in your family working and earning a paycheck. These are very real things that we heard from people when we reached out on social media. Other things that Ashley already mentioned, but really apply here. You can't control what your mind involuntarily or automatically does. We already know minds are thought-generating machines. They're very biased toward threat and negativity. You can't stop that stuff from happening. You also can't do anything about the fact that you are human. Ashley, you have a great quote, and I can't remember exactly, so I'm hoping that you'll be able to remember this awesome thing you said. You said, like, you're a human being who's, like, bound by your own physical capacity or something like that.
Oh, I have no idea. I wish I did.
God, it was so good. It was basically like, you're this amazing human being, but you have physical limitations. Like, you only have so much capacity. And that's not something that you can control. And each day has 24 hours in it.
Right. Period. So we have these constraints, right? Like, we are constrained by our biology. We are constrained by time. And we have to be realistic about that. And I think that's a place where people get, and I know we'll this will come up as we get to tips. But we want to keep doing things. I have 7,000 things to do in this day. But my body only has so much energy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sleep. You have to eat. And when we make sacrifices, that we're actually causing future problems. If you're not getting enough sleep, you're going to have less energy. And so, yeah, there's a lot. The when you said quote, the one that's been going through my mind though, is that just because life gives you a cactus doesn't mean you have to sit on it, which is like my all-time favorite coping statement. We have a giant cactus situation here, guys. Like, COVID is a cactus. But we don't have to sit on it. And some of the things that we do, without blaming, just some of the ways that we handle stress and uncertainty makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And one of that is trying to control things that we can't.
Yeah, I love it. So we've compiled a set of, call it a handful, say five-ish, because we may go off the rails a little here as we're talking. But five tips that are really based in psychological strength literature that can help you survive this school year and potentially even thrive through it. Mm-hmm. There is such a thing in the positive psychology literature of thriving through adversity, meaning like you're learning important lessons, you're growing as a person, you're expanding your comfort zone, all of those things. Are they fun and light and easy and amazing at the time? Maybe not. But you come out of the other end as an even better person. Mm-hmm. That's our goal, is to give you some tools and techniques for doing that. So we're going to run through a handful of them in this episode to hopefully give you some tools that are things that you actually can control, like things that you can actually do and decisions you can make differently on a day-to-day basis. So number one, in every type of effective therapeutic modality that we have today, also in positive psych, also in, I mean, it's really rampant throughout psychology. One of the biggest, most important things that you can do for yourself in general, but certainly right now, is to figure out for you personally, you individually, what matters to you? What actually matters to you? What are your values and which aspects of life matter to you? And what I would encourage you is to think about this two ways as you go into the school year. Think about, you know, your life has a lot of aspects to it, right? People are already talking about this, juggling work and being a spouse potentially and, you know, running a household and teaching kids and like all these different roles. There are those roles, and then there's the bullet points and sub-bullet points underneath them. Which of those are mission critical? Which ones really matter to you both now? And if you think about yourself in 5 years after this pandemic is over, which of those are going to be ones that you truly would remember and look back on 5 years from now and say, that mattered. I'm really glad that I prioritize that. So connecting to what matters is this first tip that, again, it is like rampant in psychology, one of the most important things you can do in almost any situation, but this one for sure included.
Absolutely. It's like it's like finding your North Star, right? And having your internal compass to tell you what matters, because if not, there are so many things that compete for our time and our attention and our energy. And we already said those are limited. So we have to make some choices and prioritize them. And we're healthier, happier people when what we're doing lines up with what's important to us. Now, where this goes with the school year and multiple hats is, if you're a parent, think about, well, what really matters? Because I know a lot of parents are very worried about their kids falling behind academically or social skills or for college applications and things like that. And it's so easy to get bogged down by every little detail that's coming up and every little thing when it all feels like a crisis. But if you know what's truly important, right? So if we do this in 5 years thing, what's more important to you? That your kid knew their math facts or that your kid was resilient? That your kid got every assignment done or that your kid knew she was loved? So you can think about that, because the reality is there are going to be competing demands and conflicts. You can't do it all. We can't. It's going to be impossible to wear every hat, to do everything, to navigate every situation perfectly. So when you have to make some sacrifices or compromises, let's do that with some intention and in a way that at the end of the day, you know, this was the right call for me.
Mm-hmm. There's an analogy that I like to use just in work in general, but it's a great analogy here. When every single house in the neighborhood is on fire, it's almost as though no house is on fire. Because Imagine the fire department rolls up to a cul-de-sac and every single house is on fire in the cul-de-sac. They're just going to randomly pick one and start working on that house, right? Because they're going to try to put one fire out. And by that, they're going to have to focus on one of the fires. There's no prioritization. There's no, like, how long has each of these been burning? Is there more important? You know, what, like, how do we decide? If you're doing that ahead of time, when those fires crop up, which we've all had those days, right? Your boss is calling at the same time that your kid needs something from you, at the same time that you forgot to make some important appointment, and the whole thing starts to collapse at the same time. Having your priorities set ahead of time and be ruthless. We're talking ruthless. These are high pressure times, which require really ruthless cuts in what makes it onto your priority list. Being able to follow that plan that you thoughtfully laid out beforehand is going to help you in those situations where you feel like you're just getting anxious and scared because everything's on fire at once. You know which fire to go after first because it's the one that you deeply care about. It's the one that's going to matter to you.
I love that analogy, because the other thing, if it's not random, then it's going to be a haphazard. I'll work on this one fire. Oh, wait, let me work on this one. And like, no, none of the fires go out. Mm-hmm. But if you know it's second one on the right is the top priority, take care of it first, then move on. That makes it so much easier.
Yeah.
And it also makes me kind of think about the idea like a ship in the ocean. And if you don't have a course that you're following with a destination in mind, you're just going to get blown around wherever the storm takes you. And that, okay, it's the same thing. And that's why I think there is so much push in psychology, and has been. That's been, when I look at the field of psychology and how it's changed over time from Freudian analysis to behaviorist to, you know, current, one thing that has stayed consistent is the do what matters. Find your values. And we talk about it differently, and like different people talk about it differently, but it's this having a sense of what matters to you so that you have some sort of guide, direction.
Yeah. So tip number one, connect to what matters now. Think about how you might look back on this in 5 years, and will that thing have truly mattered? Will it have actually made you meaningfully think differently about how you handled this situation? And if the answer is no, I would really question, and we're going to get to this again as like a tip in and of itself, but I would really question whether that needs to make that ruthless list of priorities that you're going to take on during this time.
I want to throw one piece in, because I love you. You've talked about like you get your post-it note.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that, because April's pretty brutal about you get a post-it note, and that's where your priorities go, your priority people or your priority demands. And that's it. Not a big post-it note, like the little ones, and that's it. So that's the really, I know the first time I heard you say that, it made me think a lot about, okay, what really is a priority? Because it's easy for everything to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also easy for something that falls more squarely as a priority on someone else's post-it note to somehow feel like it should invade yours. So again, ruthless times, guarding your own sanity. That's really what we're talking about here. I'm not talking about not being compassionate and helping others and whatever, but you have to think critically about how much capacity you have. You cannot control the fact that there are 24 hours in a day and you are a human being. And that's just the situation that we're in. Tip number two, and this, I want to speak directly to a specific set of people at this point. Tip number two is to honor the choice that you're making, not the choice that you wish you could make. And I'm going to give a specific example. Many of us, as the school year approaches, will find ourselves in a position of having to work from home or work outside the home. We're going to need to continue working for financial reasons. And that may impact the decisions that you make about whether you send your kids to school, whether they homeschool and how, all of those decisions. What I want you to think about is, what decision are you actually making? So let me give you two scenarios. You might be in a family who has one income earner that is extremely large. Like, let's say you're in a two-income household, one of the incomes is exceptionally large, and that means that you have the choice for one person to say, you know what, I'm going to take a pause for this school year. This is too hard. I'm not saying you should do this. I'm just saying this is one way you could handle it, or one choice you could make if you're in this situation. We make a lot of money. We can afford for one of us to take a pause. For everyone's sanity and for the sake of balance, one of us is going to take a pause. We're going to focus on keeping the house running, getting the kids through school, and that's the choice we're going to make. The choice you made is, I'm choosing to take a pause on my career in order to focus on schooling our kids. That's one scenario. A second scenario, let's say you have a family that is a two-income household and you need both of those incomes. Now, here's where I really want you to listen. You need both of those incomes. If you're in a situation where you could send your kids to school or not or whatever, what could happen is, you could be faced with a situation where, you know what, we need my income. We need my income to pay bills. We need my income to buy groceries. We need my income to support our lifestyle. We just do. We need it. This is the financial situation that we're in. And therefore, I can't do as good of a job focusing on homeschooling our kids or virtually schooling our kids. Or maybe we have to send them to school. The choice you are making is to choose to continue to provide for your family. The choice you're making is to continue to feed your family. The choice you are not making, you are not choosing your job over your kids. And this is where it's important. Honor the actual choice you're making, not the one you wish you could make. Of course, everyone wishes they were independently wealthy right now and didn't have to worry about some of these difficult things. That's not the case. So do not beat yourself up and allow guilt to, you know, sneak in there because you're holding yourself to a standard of a choice that wasn't actually one that you got to make in the first place.
Right.
If that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense. And it's something I find myself having a lot of conversations right now too, sort of along this line of like, how do you make good decisions? And and part of a good decision is also not beating yourself up for it is, you know, there's the, what are the actual choices in front of you? I mean, sometimes it's like, yeah, I want option D. Okay. But D is not a choice in front of you. It's A, B, or C. Mm-hmm. That I can't control what options are in front of me, just what I choose. So D is independently wealthy and I can hire a private tutor for my kids. Cool. If that's not a choice in front of you, you look at A, B, and C. You make the best decision you can based on the information available at this time. And that's it.
And you honor that choice.
And you honor that choice. And when things change, you go back and then you make another decision. And I think that also kind of gets with making choices during this uncertain time as things might change. Mm-hmm. And your decision might change. But for now, what are the actual choices in front of you? Mm-hmm. How are you prioritizing those? And then honor it and know that making the choice to feed your children, that sounds like a good choice.
It does. It does.
And most people would pick that.
Absolutely. And I hear this outside of the pandemic, but I feel like mm-hmm. this era of COVID has only increased the pressure in this area where we feel like somehow we have a set of dependencies on us. We have a set of it's just the reality of how our family works, yet we're holding ourselves to this other standard. And so, you know, I love that toward the beginning of the pandemic, you know, at first everyone said, oh, we're all in the same boat. And then people started to catch on like, no, we're all going through the same storm, but we have very different boats. And
that's such a good way to put that.
It's just the fact of the matter. So given the boat that you're in, make the best choice that you can make and honor that choice, not the choice that you wish you could make.
I love that.
Tip number three, I want to tell a little story of when I had my first baby. So I had my first child 4.5 years ago, and we really, like a lot of women, we really struggled with breastfeeding, like really struggled. And for women who have had babies, you know, that's a very emotional time. As is this situation. So I feel like it makes a really good analogy, but you're in this really emotional situation. You're having to make decisions. And one of the decisions that I had to make was, am I going to supplement my baby with formula, or am I going to continue and probably struggle with breastfeeding this baby? And again, this is not to say one is better, blah, 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 blah. This is just to provide an example of something that I went through. So I was struggling with this, and I talked to a girlfriend of mine who said the most incredible thing, and it has stuck with me. And it's the advice that I give myself over and over again, every time I'm faced with something that feels like a really big decision for my kid. And my friend said this, she said, okay, your baby is 4 weeks old right now, right? Yeah. She said, imagine that baby at age 14 and imagine a line of 114-year-olds in front of you. What degree of accuracy do you think you would have if you had to pick out which one of those 14-year-olds was supplemented with formula? How good do you think you'd do? And I was like, I don't think I'd do very well. And she's like, right. She said, a lot of the decisions we make with babies and with kids feel like a big deal at the time, but in the end, most of them come out in the wash. And so they just aren't that big of a deal. Not all, but right. A lot of them.
I love that. Cause I mean, from there's so much pressure, right? And decisions feel so big, but honestly, very few decisions are life and death. And I say that also knowing there are some implications during a pandemic, but very few decisions we make are life and death. And when it comes to our kids, yes, your decisions matter as a parent, you know, what you do and how you respond to things. But I remember being at a dinner with a former supervisor of mine. I interned at a children's hospital, and this was post-graduation. I had moved back to Kansas City. I was at a dinner with a former supervisor. So this is a psychologist who has worked in a children's hospital at that point for like 30 years. And his so he's seen it all, right? And his comment was like, kids are resilient. And I loved it because it was really this, your point, April, like, let's put it in perspective. Mm-hmm. This feels like a big deal, but is it really a make or break decision?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I use that especially for things like, and I rely on my own situation because we always talk about how you and I love doing this work because we're literally behind the scenes doing the same things we tell you guys to do. Yeah. We do use these exact same tools. But when I'm making decisions with my kids, so, you know, I'm just, given the way our family is structured, I'm with my kids a lot alone in the evenings. They're at crazy young ages where they're really, it is like anarchy chaos in our house in the evenings. And there are evenings where I'm like, wow, if I was going to be the perfect Instagram mom, I would not have my kid parked in front of Paw Patrol right now. But I really have to do a few things in the kitchen, in the house to just, you know, create a little bit of order in this chaos. And I need them occupied because they're so young, they kind of need you there. And so in those moments, I love to think like, okay, they're going to watch 20 minutes of Paw Patrol while I go do this thing, or I'm going to let my daughter watch one more movie, you know, this week or whatever it is, because I needed to get something done, or I needed a break, for God's sake, right? Like, I needed a break. When she's 14, will I know, like, will I even realize that that extra episode of Paw Patrol happened? You have no idea. We fret over these tiny things that in the end, they all just come out in the wash. They don't matter.
Yeah. It makes sense.
So future pacing, is it going to matter in 5 to 10 years?
Yeah.
Do you really see it making a difference? And think about this one as it connects to tip number one, connecting what matters.
That's
and then
exactly
also
what I was just thinking.
Yeah. How you want to think back.
Yeah. Which fire to put out first, rather than, because there is a problem if it's like, well, I don't feel like doing this, I'll just go with what's easy. Like, what's easy in the moment. Cause then we could argue, well, one episode of Paw Patrol turned into 47, which turned into like 4 years. Yeah. Maybe there are some problems, but if you're being intentional, you've got your North Star guiding you. And you're going with the choices that are actually in front of you, this all kind of ties together. And is it really going to matter?
Mm-hmm.
And I find this one, like with this future pacing piece too, again, with kids, like, do I want to battle over this homework, or do I want to just put it aside and play a game? Kids will catch up academically. And believe me, I'm all for education, right? Like, you and I are about the biggest nerds I know. We've put a lot of time and years into education, so I value it very much. But I also know kids and mental health and stress, and this is a very stressful time for them too. And being able to look at what really matters, what can and can't be caught up. All right, they can catch up on an academic assignment, but would it be better for everybody to play a game? Or take a break, or watch a show. What do we need to do to prioritize here?
Yeah. And this is where, you know, I mentioned we might go off script. So I'm going off script. Heads up. We don't really have a script, but we're going to go off of like the general game plan we wrote down on our post.
I have no idea what you're going to say next.
Yay. Oh man. Let's hope it's good. Something that crops up too, is that think about when we are typically in crisis, like individually, it's because, you know, I think back to my family when my dad passed away. That's something that uniquely happened to my family. The rest of the kids in my class weren't battling a crisis like that. When I got sick with MS and I went like blind randomly, like within 3 days, I went from being able to see to not being able to see, and like, oh, cool. Like, how do I do
life
like this? Like, I had no time to cope. Awesome. That was a crisis that I uniquely was going through, and the kids in my class weren't going through that. So there's kind of two aspects about this that I want to call out. One of them is, and this will connect to our next tip as well, so we'll bring this back up, but like one of them is you're not in crisis by yourself. So don't think that if your kid, let's say the worst happens, right? Like you somehow did not figure out how to be the perfect homeschooling virtual teacher person ever for your kids, and they slipped a little bit in math, slipped a little bit in English, whatever it happens to be. How much do you want to bet that they're the only kid that did?
Right?
Because 100% of kids in the United States are going through this pandemic as well. Every kid in that class is as well.
Yep.
So one side of it is if they're slipping, they are not the only ones. Like we as a society are going to, this is going to be longer than this 1 year. Even when they go back to school, we all just need to like agree that we're going to come together as a society and support these kids to help them, you know, ease into and ease back into the trajectory that they were on before.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece that I want to call out is nobody's going to get, and we talked about this in our live workshops at the beginning of COVID. Nobody's going to get a reward or a medal or some kind of cash payment for how well they handled COVID. No one's getting that. You can't win COVID. You can't win homeschooling. Like there's no reason to compare because every kid has their strengths and the things that they're not as good at. Every kid is an extrovert or an introvert, which brings its own challenges during these times. Every kid is good at certain things that require more hands-on, or maybe they're bad at those. It doesn't matter. Everybody's on their own unique trajectory here. And comparison and competition, it's you're not going to win. It's a game that you can't win. There's no game to play here.
Yeah. No, I think that's such a good point. And I find myself asking the question a lot, like, let's say it's that future casting piece, right? Like COVID's over and you look back on it. How do you want to feel about the way you handled it? How do you want to say you spent your time? Stressed out, snapping at everybody because you were trying to put out all of the fires at once? Or you want to feel good about the way you handled it? Because you did what was important. You gave yourself some grace. Understood. We can't, the pre-COVID standards no longer apply. We need different standards, right? This is a different game.
Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting is as we move into this fourth tip from this little diversion that I've taken us on, other people may have their standards for us. Right? Your boss, I've seen it out there. I've seen people's posts. Man, is there a continuum of how people's jobs and the expectations they have, how they're handling it. Mm-hmm. Some of them are beautifully understanding and flexible, and others are rigid and not. That's a set of expectations that others are putting on you. There is also, and you can't control them. You right. can't. What you can control, though, is where we're going to get to with tip four, how like the set of expectations you put on yourself and how you respond and how you support what you're able to do given the situation you're in. And all of that boils down to self-compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley, you have an amazingly concise and beautiful way of summing up sort of the compassion literature and how we actually practice it. I'm wondering if I can throw you on a soapbox for a second to go through that.
Dude, I almost forgot what tip four was. So self-compassion is essentially including ourselves in the circle of compassion. So compassion is when we can understand someone else, like understand someone's struggle, like empathy, with a desire to alleviate their suffering. That's compassion, understanding and a desire to alleviate their suffering. Self-compassion is just putting us in that circle. We're people too, right? So when we're struggling, and we're all struggling in very different ways, in some common ones, it's really important to be self-compassionate. Now, here's what self-compassion is not. That inner critic. You should be doing more. You should be doing better. They're disappointed in you. You're dropping the ball. Okay. That's not self-compassionate. And more so, it's not very helpful. And I talk to a lot of people who have very strong inner critics who think that it's helpful, that it's motivating, that it helps me succeed and achieve. And I would say, okay, I get it. But imagine that you're an athlete. Which coach is going to get more from that athlete? The coach that's like, you suck, do harder, that's not good enough, that's pushing, pushing, driving, that coach may get results. Or the coach that sees that athlete. I get it. Here's where you're struggling. Here's what you can do to be better. You've got this. Keep going. Still giving direction. That's self-compassion. So we're going to, the pieces of it are, one, you got to acknowledge what's really going on. If you're trying to shove your feelings down, I shouldn't feel this way. I don't have a right. Some people have it so much harder. Yes, some people have it objectively worse than you do. And you are still suffering. Mm-hmm. Someone else's suffer does not cancel yours out. So the first part of being self-compassionate is just acknowledging what's actually coming up. You got to get real with yourself. This is hard. I'm feeling overwhelmed, stressed out, spread too thin. I'm ticked off, whatever it is, acknowledge it. Second piece is you got to connect with common humanity. Those are the terms that we use. What that really means is you are not alone. And so acknowledge that, like, of course this is hard because it's a hard situation. Or yes, anybody in this set of circumstances would be feeling this way. So I kind of think of it as the acknowledge and then the, of course this is what it is. The third piece is offer a kindness. What would you say to your best friend? What would you say to a child? To someone who's suffering through no fault of their own? What would you say? And we got to say the same thing to ourselves. It's not going to be helpful to say, wow, this is really hard. I get it. Everybody's having a hard time, but you should do better. No, we got to be real with ourselves. Acknowledge that, of course, this is hard. And here's a kindness.
Mm-hmm. It's such a simple, but really powerful equation. We're thinking about how we talk to ourselves. What I heard when I reached out on Instagram, you know, I reached out and I said, hey, tell me what the thing is that you are struggling with the most as you think about the school year coming up. And people said things like, I'm going to assume too many roles. I'm going to have to play too many roles, wear too many hats. I'm not going to have time to manage it all. I'm going to have to balance everything. This one just hit me to my core. It's already hard to be a good employee and a good mom. Now I have to be a good teacher too. All of that was laced with messages around perfectionism and having really high expectations for ourselves. And it's a recipe for failure. You're being put in a situation where if that's the bar, you're going to fail, and then you're going to beat yourself up for failing.
Right.
And it's one thing. And the reason why this happens is because you're a good person. You desire to be a good person, to do a good job. You know, you want to show up for everybody and be that person who's strong. And those are admirable qualities. But you don't have any control over the fact that you're just a human being. Like, you're one person who has one person's capacity on a daily basis. And if you snap, or you are fried one day, or your patience is low one day, or whatever, the last thing that's going to help you get out of that situation is to beat yourself up for it.
Yeah.
It's not going to help.
Even from like a neurological standpoint, beating yourself up is going to trigger that's a threat, right? Oh, someone is attacking me. That provokes anxiety or a fear response, even when it's, I'm attacking me, right? So where I'm going with this is that, check yourself. When you're beating yourself up, how do you feel? It's anxious. It's guilty. It's frustrated. That's it. Mm-hmm. Does that help you move forward? Or is that sitting on the cactus?
Mm-hmm. Something you said, we did some self-compassion work in a workshop a while back. And this is one of those where I feel like people could roll their eyes and feel like it's a little bit fluffy. Like, it's not actually as impactful as you and I know it is. Mm-hmm. You were talking about the research of our fight or flight response, and basically the cortisol squeeze that you get when you're in a situation that is really threatening and you get that fight or flight response, right? You get some adrenaline, you get some cortisol. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that we get out of those situations is to run away. And that is what that act of like getting away or that act of moving away from something threatening, it sort of downregulates our nervous system. It helps us feel better. We all know that cortisol, adrenaline on a regular basis, it's not good for us chronically. But I think I remember you saying something like this compassion equation that you just gave, right? Like acknowledging the situation you're in, connecting to a common humanity and offering a kindness, that equation does some of the same downregulation work. It's some of the same, it like operates on some of the same channels as that fight or flight response in order to help you feel like you are getting over a threat. Mm-hmm. So if you think this is fluffy, like go back to some basic neurological findings and just know that you are acting on that same sort of brain pathway.
Yes.
That helps you feel safe again. And yeah, that's the whole goal, like get away from a threat and feel safe again.
Yeah. So, and I got to be honest, because I mean, I had the same reaction to self-compassion as I did to mindfulness, which is that's a bunch of fluffy nonsense until I looked at the data. And now I am fully on the mindfulness bandwagon because it's scientifically solid. It's the same thing. Self-compassion, because it includes a mindful component. You get all of those benefits, but it does help. And so we get to reduce that stress response. We get to also tap into that like bonding response. That's like oxytocin and dopamine. Those are the feel good bonding chemicals. So this is, it's real. And I get it, because then I will also throw out just some of the research, like self-compassion is actually associated with more productivity, better outcomes, better performance. So again, go back to the coach. Which coach is going to get the best performance out of their players, right? Same thing for ourselves. So self-compassion is huge. Yeah. And I think about, especially during this go back to school time, you had a guest on toward the beginning, I think, of COVID, she made the comment about like, it's not that you're doing a bad job. It's an impossible job or something. Mm-hmm. What I took from that is like, there is no way to do a good job here. Mm-mm. And so and that's what I mean by we have to adjust our standards. And I'm not saying become a slacker. I'm saying be realistic. Just be realistic. We can't wear 3 hats simultaneously and do it with a smile all day, every day. It's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great segue into tip 5. Guess what? I'm going to give a marathon analogy, which Yay! I do a lot. I mean, but it's, again, I feel like it's a useful analogy. People look at people who finish marathons, or especially finish like an Ironman, right? Where you swim something like 2.5 miles, bike 112, and then run a marathon. Like, right, that is an accomplishment. You would look at those people and be like, dang, that is a huge accomplishment. Shannon Schottler, if you're listening to this episode, I'm virtually waving at you because you have finished an Ironman. So high five, sister. Anyway, I just had to throw that out there. People would look at somebody who finishes endurance events like that, like, wow, you're amazing. Here's the little known fact about that, though. During those endurance events, you have an A+ level of running. You can sprint. Man, you can run fast. That is not your goal. You will not finish, unless you are one of the elite 0.001% in the world, you will not finish that event. You won't make it through it if that's how you're going to approach it. Your job on the day of race day for this endurance event, which we know COVID is quite the endurance event, mm-hmm, is to run at about 60%. You want a C+. You don't want any more than a C+, because you can't sustain more than a C+. You won't make it. Mm-hmm. And if you could look at a person who finishes an Ironman and think they are so amazing for showing up and doing C+ work, you can show up and do C+ work, because that's what's going to get you through this. Like, get it done, lay down the perfection. This is not a time to be trying to do the opus of your life's work. This is a time for you to focus on what matters and give that your effort, and understand that you're not going to be perfect at everything. You can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. It makes me think, I did a 10K as my first race, lengthy that's lengthy to me, race that happened to be getting over a chest cold. And I decided to go anyways, but I had to run so incredibly slow. I'm using run. It was like slow motion. So it was so incredibly slow. But when I reflected on it and I wrote a piece, it was like, here are my life lessons for my first 10K. One of them was that, essentially like that starting out and going slow, I was forced to, because otherwise I was going to have a coughing fit. But that was what actually allowed me to finish. And it was very counterintuitive to me, because until that point, my plan was to go and run at the rate I normally do for much shorter distances and just try to like plug through it. And it was, I guess it was just kind of eye-opening to me, because it just seemed so backward. I never would have thought, go slow, slow down, do less so that I can do it longer. And say that, that's kind of like a duh, but it's so important, I think, when we're going into a school year. When COVID's continuing we're already at it for months. We got months to go. Who knows? To adjust that. It's energy management and setting realistic expectations and focusing on what matters, kind of tying everything together.
Yeah. So just to run through those one more time, we talked about tip one being connecting to what matters now, deciding what are your priorities going to be, being ruthless about what makes that list, and also with an eye to the future, looking back, what are going to be the things that you really did care about? Like knowing yourself 5 years from now, when you look back, what are you actually going to have cared about? Tip two was to honor the choice that you're making, not the choice that you wish you could make. This one's going to be a really big one, because comparison, holy cow, we really get into that so easily. Tip three is to future pace, to think about us way on the other side of this. And did that thing that we were fretting about, did it come out in the wash? And is it likely that it really didn't matter in the first place? Because your limited energy needs to only be focused on the things that are going to matter. Tip four, self-compassion. Downregulate your immune system. Allow yourself to feel safe. Allow yourself to feel supported. You need it. If you are wearing all of those hats, you have to be supported. And it might be you that has to give yourself that pep talk and be compassionate to hold yourself up. Mm-hmm. And then last, be an Iron Man. Go at 60%. C+. That's what we're going for. Yeah. Keep yourself going. Don't burn yourself out. It's really hard to overcome something like that when you're mid-race if you've run yourself out. So reserve some energy. Don't burn yourself out right in the beginning.
Love it.
Awesome. Those are the five tips that we had for you guys. I would love to hear from you, particularly as your school year starts up. I'd love to hear what you guys are struggling with. And what we can do, more importantly, to support. There's a couple of things that we can do here. If we hear that people are struggling with a particular topic that we could teach on, maybe we'll hold a workshop. If there is a particular expert that we might be able to bring on who could speak to something that you're struggling with, we could go seek out that expert. There's a lot, we could do more podcast episodes on it. There's a lot of options that we have in order to support this community. But the biggest thing we want you to know as we close out this episode is that that's our goal here, is to support this community. We come on here with these podcast episodes, we pick our topics because we know they're ones that you guys want some help with and want another opinion or another perspective on. And you guys matter. So, I mean, reach out to us, whether it's on Instagram, whether it's through our website. We can drop our contact page in the episode description of this episode. Reach out and let us know what we can do. Any final words?
I think that's a good place to wrap up for today.
I love it. All right. Well, no matter what, guys, just know as this is going, this cannot last forever. We will get through it. You are doing an amazing job. It's hard because it's hard. It's not hard because you're doing a bad job. And everybody is truly in this same storm, even though we're all facing, you know, slightly different circumstances as we go through it. So do not be a stranger. Reach out to us. Take care of yourself. You're doing great. And we'll see you back here next week for another episode. Thanks so much.
Bye, guys.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.